Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Daf Kufhet. Today's daf has been sponsored by Mr. Joe Alaham in honor of the Rabbi. Tiskele Mitzvot. Today's daf is being studied by Le'ilu Nishmat Acham Baruch Nefael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. We are on the bottom of Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Bet, and we are starting four lines from the bottom. Actually, five lines from the bottom. Amar Mor Bar Hamduri, Amar Shemuel, Hoshit Yado Lemei Behema. If let's say a person extended his hand into the womb of an animal, V'dildel Ubar Shebemeiha, and he dislocated the embryo that was in his womb, and by that he killed the baby animal that was inside. So the Gemara says, Hayav. So in such a case is going to be Hayav. Now there's the machloket amongst the Rishonim, what exactly you Hayav for by, you know, pulling the animal, dislocating it in the fetus. According to the Ramban, the Isut is Netilat Neshama. It is a Toldah of Shochet. According to the Yerushalmi, this would be kotzer, reaping. Now, the Ramban didn't like to learn like that because he has a rule in kitzira ela bigidulei karka, that kotzer only applies to things that are growing from the ground. There's another chitav that Tosfot read that wants to say, well, there's not going to be a din of kotzer in this case, but there'll be a din of gozez. Gozez would be shearing. So it's like different opinions exactly what the chayuv is, but clearly, if one dislocates it and causes it to die, at least it would be hayav mishum netilat neshama. That's the opinion we take as the Ramban, let's say. So Gemara says, "My ta'ama, what's the reason?" So Amar Rava, so Rava said, "Bar hamduri asbirali." Bar hamduri explained it to me. Lav Amar Avsheshat, didn't Avsheshat say, "Hai man de talash keshuta mehizme vehege," a person that, let's say, is tolesh, he uproots keshuta. Keshuta would be hops. Mehizme vehege, let's say, from the thorny area that it grows on. These hops are not really attached to the ground, but they grow on like the thorns and the thistles that are in the fields. So the Gemara says, isn't it so that if a person uproots keshuta hops from the hizmevege mehayev mishum oker davar megidulo, isn't he hayav because he uprooted something from a place that it grows? Hakaname mehayev here too. Bottom line, when you pull the animal out of the fetus, you dislocate it mishum oker davar megidulo. You indeed pulled it out of its place where it grows. Gemara says, Amar Abaye. Abaye goes further and says, Hayman de talish pitra meuna de hatsiba mehayev mikshum oker davar megidulo. Pitra would be pitriot, as she says, that's mushrooms. Meuna de hasba, sometimes it grows, mushrooms grow on the rim of, let's say, a keli. Again, it's a fungus, so it can grow anywhere. So as a person, let's say, pulls the mushrooms off the rim of a barrel, so he's going to be hayav. Why? Because bottom line, he's uprooting something from the place where it normally grows. Gemara says, Mativ Rav Moshe Hayar, Moshe had a question. Hatolesh me'atzitz nakuv hayav. If a person, let's say, uproots something from a flower pot that has a hole on the bottom of it, meaning the flower pot is attached to the ground, so then he's going to be hayav for tolesh. V'she'enu nakuv. However, if he tolesh from a flower pot that does not have a hole on the bottom, so he's going to be patur. So the question is, what's the difference? Why over there, when you take from the flower pot that doesn't have a hole on the bottom of it, meaning it's not sitting on the ground, in that case you're going to be patur. However, in the case of the mushrooms, when you just pull it off the rim of the barrel, you're saying that you're going to be hayav. Gemara says, big difference. Hatam lav hainu rebite. In the case of a flower pot that does not have a hole on the bottom of it, that's not considered the natural habitat where these things grow, and therefore it's not considered the normal tilisha. Ha'akha, but when it comes to the mushrooms, hayu debite, that's its habitat, that's where it grows, and therefore it's considered oker davar megidulo, because you're pulling something from its habitat. Now she says, why is it not considered the natural habitat in a flower pot that doesn't have a hole on the bottom of it? So in the third line he says, the end derech zidi'ah sham. It's not the normal really to plant in such pots. Aval elu sha'amadnu or ikar gedulam. But the case that we gave above, for example, the hops that grow on the hizmi and the higi, that's where they grow. And therefore it's considered oker davan, megidula, uprooting something from its place that it grows. The Gemara continues, Amar Ravuna Ravuna tot, kodvim tefillin al gabe or shel of tahor. It is permissible to write tefillin on the or the skin of a kosher bird. Amar Rav Yosef, Maika Mashmalan, what are you teaching me, Ravuna? What's your hiddush? The itle or? Is the hiddush that you're telling me that birds or ofot, that they have or, that their flesh is indeed called or? Because we know to write the tefillin, you have to write it on or. So is your hiddush to tell me that a bird has or? Tanina, we learned that in our Mishnah. Ha-chovel bahen hayav. Our Mishnah clearly said that if a person makes a habura in a bird, so he's going to be hayav. Now we learned the rule would be, is that only things that have or are shayach to the isur of habura, because the blood gets caught between the or and then eventually is going to exit. So that's a bifirush Mishnah, that a sipor, that a bird, that an off has also, Ravuna, what was your chidush? Obviously, if it's or, so why can't you use it for tefillin? Amale Abaye, tuva kamashmalan. What do you mean? He says, he taught us something great. Tuva kamashmalan. A lot he taught us. The imi matnitin, because if I only rely on a Mishnah, hava mina kevan di'it ben nikbe nikbe. No. Now, I might have said that since the flesh of the off has holes in it, little holes in it. Why does it have little holes in it? From the feathers, when you pluck the feathers out, it leaves little holes. So I might have said, yeah, it's considered odd, but it might not be kasher for writing tefillin on because of the little holes that are on it. Kamash ma'alan, and that's Ravuna's hiddush to tell us, no, it's still kasher. Why? Kedamri b'marava, like they taught in the West, kol nekev, any hole on a piece of cloth, shadio overet alav, that the ink is able to fill the hole, meaning go over the hole when you're writing and fill in the hole, eno nekev. That's not considered a nekev. And the way they judge that is when the sofer is writing, if the quill that he's using, if he's writing and it's smooth, you don't feel anything when you're going over that hole, that's considered a small enough hole and the tefillin would be kasher. So the chidush is that even though they have very small holes, Ravuna was coming to say, still, they are kasher for the writing of tefillin. Meti ve'er, the Gemara has a question from a Braita. Meti ve'er be zera. That's the text that we have. And some say, mativ Rav Zera. That would make more sense. Meaning Rav Zera wrote a question from a Braita. Bichnafav. We have a law in the Torah that talks about ola ta'of. That's the korban that they bring from the birds. And the Torah tells us that after you kill it, you make milika, then you have to tear it apart. It says v'shisa oto b'chnafav. It says you tear it apart when the kenafim are still on it, when the feathers are still on the bird. You tear it apart and you put it on the mizbeah. So the Gemara says b'chnafav. What's the Torah's chidush by telling us that you tear it apart when it still has its kenafim, which means its wings and its feathers? Lehakshir etaor. It's coming to tell you that, well, obviously if it has its feathers on it, then obviously it still has its or on it, right? Because the feathers are in the or. And the Torah is coming to tell you, hidush, that what? That even the or of the bird goes on the mizbeah. So the Gemara says, v'isal kadatach oru. If you're telling me that the flesh of a bird is considered or, hechi marbe lekra. How could the pasuk be coming to tell me they could put the or on the mizbeach? Why? Because we know that by a regular korban, meaning all that behemah, the Torah clearly says you must skin it first. The or of a behemah is not allowed to go on the mizbeach. So we see from there, or is not fit for the mizbeach. So how could you tell me that the flesh of a bird is called or because the Torah clearly lets me put this on the Mizbeach. And the Torah letting me put it on the Mizbeach, it must not be Or. Because we know that by Or Behema, the Torah clearly says you can't put it. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye Oru. Says, no, really I'll tell you it is Or. Verachamana Rabia. And the Hadush of the Torah is that even though it is indeed Or, you're allowed to put it on the Mizbeach. It's different than the Olat Behema. No question. Ika de Amri, some have it a little differently. Amar Bizera. Afanana mitarina. We learned in a Mishnah. Bichnafav. The Pasuk says that you tear it, you rip the bird. Bichnafav in its wings with its feathers. Lerabot etaor. Right, so the Hadush of the Torah is coming to say that you put it on the Mizbeach with the or, with its or. He amar bishtama or who. Then he goes the other way. He says, if you tell me that the flesh of a bird is indeed called or, now we know why we need a special pasuk to come and include that you're allowed to put it on the Mizbeach. Because since it's or, and since we know that normally that by olat behema you can't put it, so the Torah has to go out of its way to tell us by olat ta'of you can. But if you told me that it's not or, so then why would you need a pasuk to come and include it? If it's just regular flesh, obviously you're allowed to put regular flesh on the Mizbeach. Amar le Abaye. So Abaye told Rabbi Zera, Le'olam emalach lav orhu. I could argue on you. I could tell you really maybe that it's not considered or. Maybe the flesh of the off is not or. Of it's tarikh. And still we need a pasuk to come and say that non-or, still you could put it on the Mizbeach. Why? Isn't it obvious? No. Salka datachamina kevan di'it pe'piritze ma'is. Since the flesh of the off has holes in it, so I might have thought that it's ma'us. It's disgusting to put such a thing on the Mizbeach. It's not mechubah, it's not respectful to put such a thing on the Mizbeach. Kamash malan, that's what it has to say. No. Even though maybe it's not or, but still you might have thought you can't put it on the Mizbeach because of the holes that are in it. Kamash malan, that you can. Comes again when it says, Ba'amine mor bere deravina merav nachman bar yitzhak. Ma'u lichtof tefillin al gabe or shel dag tahor. Can you write tefillin on the flesh of, on the or of a dag tahor, of a kosher fish? Amale im yavo Eliyahu v'yomar. If Eliyahu will come and tell us, then we'll know. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Ma im yavo Eliyahu v'yomar. What does that mean? If Eliyahu and Navi comes and tells us, what did you mean by that? Ile ma i'it le'or, or delet le'or. Because if you mean to tell me that we have to wait for Eliyahu and Navi to tell us if a fish indeed has or not, meaning is the skin of a fish considered or not, ha-chazin and de'it le'or. We don't need Eliyahu and Navi for that. We see clearly that it does have or, meaning the thickness of the flesh of the skin does clearly qualify it for or. So we don't need Eliyahu for that. Ve'od, and furthermore, hatena, we learned in the Mishnah, atzamot hadag ve'oro, the bones of a fish and its or, matzilin be'ohel amet. These items are matzil be'ohel amet. The law is, if let's say you have a keli, right? A vessel in a ohel amet, in a tent, or in a roofed area where there's a mit, so everything in the vessel becomes tameh, unless it is covered. Now, if it's covered, meaning, let's say it's a keli hayres, it's an earthenware vessel, and it has samit patil, a cover over it, so the covering is able to save everything inside. But the only rule is that covering has to be something that's not subject to tum'ah. Because if the covering itself can become tameh, it can as well metameh what is inside. So the Gemara tells us that the or of a fish is able to be used as a covering in order to save the tum'ah that is inside the keli. Now, if the or of a fish was considered like regular basar, it would not save what's inside the keli, because regular basar is mekabel tum'ah. And therefore, from the fact that it's telling us that atzamot hadag, the bones of the fish, ve'oro, and its or matzilin be'oil amet, has the ability to save things from becoming tameh, that means it's not mekabel tum'ah. So therefore, it must be considered or. So therefore, what do you need Eliyahu and Navi to come and tell us if it's or not? We clearly know from a logic point and from a halachic point that the or of the fish is indeed considered or. So the Gemara says, Ela, im yavo Eliyahu v'yomar, hi paska zohama mineh, ila paska zohama mineh. We have to ask Eliyahu and Navi if after processing the skin of the fish into leather, if it's considered still mizuham, if it's still considered smelly, like it was originally, and therefore you would not be allowed to use it for tefillin, or do we say that after you process it, the smell is not considered offensive anymore, and therefore you can use it? That's the way some of the Rishonim learned. The Ran does not like it. The Ran comes along and asks, "That what are you talking about? What do you need a Yanavi for that? We can tell ourselves if it smells after the process of tanning it or not. So therefore, you don't need a Yanavi to tell us if it still smells or not." So therefore, the way the Ran learns is based on a Gemara that tells us that after Adam and Hava committed the sin from eating from the tree, so it says the snake placed a spiritual zuhama, it's called, spiritual poison, so to speak, in the whole creation, in all human beings and in animals. And the people suffered with that zuhama up until they reached Har Sinai. At Matan Torah, the Gemara says, Paska zuhamatan. That zuhama, that spiritual contamination, ended. The Jewish people reached purity as if they were at the time of Adam HaRishon before the sin. And even the animals, that zuhama that was in them was fixed. However, the fish that were not at Har Sinai, there was a question if their zuhama stopped or not. So since they were not at Har Sinai, the zuhama is still in them. So we need Eliyahu HaNavi to tell us when he comes if the zuhama that's in the fish, that spiritual contamination, was taken away or not. If it's taken away, then you can use it for tefillin. If not, then it's still considered mizuham, it's contaminated, and therefore you would not be allowed to use it. So that's the way the Ran learns what you need Eliyahu HaNavi to tell us, this spiritual zuhama, if it's still in the fish or not. Comes the Gemara and says, Shmuel veKarna, Shmuel and a rabbi called Karna, Habu Yadve Aguda Denahar Malka. They were sitting by the banks of the river Malka. Hazinu lemaya dekadalu ve'achire. They saw that the water was very wavy. The water was rising up to a big wave. Ve'achire is also dirty waters. Now, it was not necessarily a windy day, so that was a little strange that you see such tall waves. And the water was dirty. So Amar le Shmuel lekarna, so Shmuel told Karna, Gavrar Abba Ka'atem Ma'araba. Must be there's a great man coming from the west that's on that boat, a great man from Eretz Israel. Ve'hayish b'me'eh. And he must have intestinal problems, stomach problems. Ve'kad dalumaya. And therefore the wave is rising high. Lagbule apeh kameh. In order to conceal him. Meaning, obviously, he needs to relieve himself over the side of the boat. And in order to keep him mitzni'ut, so he's modest way, so God brought the wave very high to keep him modest, and that's why you see the dirty waters, because that's the man that suffers from the problems. So the Gemara says, Shmuel tells Karna, Zil tahele akankane, which means, go test his barrels, which means literally, you know, go see if he knows his stuff. Shmuel was saying, go test him. Go test his wine. Go check his barrels. The reason why Shmuel gave that example to Karna is that Ramban explains that was Karna's job. He used to be the wine taster. He's in charge of testing the barrels. So Shmuel gave him a mashal in his industry. So he said, oh, you know what? Go to this rabbi and see if he knows anything. Test his wine. See if he has wisdom. Azal. So Karna went, Ashkeche l'Rav. He actually found that great man that was coming from the Eretz Yisrael was indeed Rav, the great Hakam. So Amarle, so now Karna's going to start testing Rav to see if he knows anything. Now, Amarle, he tells him, Minayin she'en kotvim tefilin ela al gabe or behema tehora. First question he asked them is, how do you know that you can only write tefillin on the flesh of a kosher animal? Behema teora, the kosher species. Amaleh, so Rav answered him, Dichtiv, Lema'an tiyeh torat Hashem beficha. Because the Pasuk says that the Torah must be in your mouth, and we learn from there, min hamutar beficha, meaning the Torah can only be written on something that's permissible to eat. So the Gemara then says, he asked him another question. Minayin ledam shehu adom. How do you know that blood is red? Now, what's the question? How do we know blood is red? Which means in Masechet Nida, the Mishnah over there tells us that in order for dam to be considered Timeah, it has to be the color red. And the Gemara there lists different colors. And the Gemara says all those colors are really red. It has a redness in them. So obviously the Gemara is assuming that that is the color of blood to be considered Timeah. How do we know that that is the default, let's say, color of blood? Which is even when the Gemara says over there, black, for example, as metamenida, Gemara says black is really red that just got spoiled. So obviously the Gemara is holding that the color of blood is red. So comes the Gemara and says, how do you know that? Shnei Emar, he quotes a pasuk in the Nevi'im, Vayir'u Moav mineged etamayim adumim kadam. This is one of the miracles of Elisha Navi. There was a war that the three kings were fighting against Moab. And what happened was, there was the two Jewish kings and the king of Edom. And they didn't have any water. The prophet Elisha made them a big pool of water. The enemy, Moab, looked in the morning and they saw a big pool of blood. Because the way the sun was reflecting on that water, it looked like blood. So they had thought that the three kings that were coming to attack them ended up having a civil war amongst themselves and killed each other. And that was the blood. And therefore that motivated Moab and drew them into the war. And they ended up coming to battle. They ended up dying. But you see clearly, what does the pasuk say? Vayir'u Moab minegad tamayim adumim kedam. It was red like blood. And he asked him another question. Minayin lemila sheba'oto makom. How do you know Brit Milah is done in that place? She said, how do you know the place where you do the Brit Milah? The Torah doesn't really specify it. So he says, Ne'emar kan orlato. So he said, it says by Brit Milah the word orlato. Ve'ne'emar la'alan, and it says in another place, orlato. That's talking about the law of orla, meaning the first 3 years of the fruit tree, and they're off limits, one cannot benefit from them. So it says also by the fruit trees, the word orlato. Ma la'alan davar she'ose peri. Just like when it says orlato over there, it's referring to something that is fruitful, right? A tree that makes fruit. Afkan, so to babrit milah, davar she'ose peri. The brit milah must be done in a place that is able to be fruitful. So that would be the makom milah. So they asked him a question. Ema libo. Who told you it's that spot? Maybe it's referring, maybe, he was asking just another question. He was saying, maybe the Brit Milah is supposed to be done in a person's heart. How do we know? Dichtiv, umaltem et orlat lebabchem. Because the Pasuk does say you should circumcise the orla of your heart. It means he knew that you can't take a circumcision on your heart. He was just asking him, how do you answer that question? But the Torah does say that orlat lebabchem. So he says, for that matter, Emma Ozno, for that matter, how do you know it's not his ear? Why, Dichtiv, Hine Orla Oznam. We have another Pasuk. That Pasuk is in the Nevi'im, in Yirmiyah, that clearly says, Hine Arela Oznam. But you see, it's calling the Ozen, let's say the lobe, it's calling it a Orla. So how do you know it's not those parts? So he says, Danin Orlato Tamam Orlato Tama. His eye brought you a derasha on the word Orlato, which is referring to a specific orla, which means when the Torah says, by Brit Milah, it says orlato, his orla, and by the case of the trees, it says orlato. So I made a gezerah shava on the complete word, orlato, orlato. Ve'en danin orlato tama. We don't make a derasha from orlato, which is complete, me orlat she'ena teme'a, from the word, she'ena tama, from the word orla that is not complete. And therefore, that was the gezerah shava that Rav made. Amarle, so now they start to have the conversation. Rav tells him, Mashemach, what's your name? So he says, Karna. He says, my name is Karna. Amarle, so Rav said, Yeh la'ava, may it be the will of God, the tipuk le karna be'ene, that you should have a keren come out of your eye. Some learned that he cursed them that he should have cataracts, and some told them that he should have a keter as like a protrusion coming from his eye, which means Rav figured out here that Kadna was actually testing him, and he felt that that was a lack of respect for Tamidei HaChamim. And Rav, being the Gadol Ador, needed to make a strong stand when he got to Babel, that you cannot mizalzel, you cannot mistreat the kavod of Tamidei HaChamim. You don't come along and start, you know, arbitrarily testing Tamidei HaChamim, giving him a quiz. So therefore he didn't like that. He felt it was disrespectful, and therefore he gave him a sharp curse like that. Comes the Gemara and says, Lesof, in the end, Aile Shemuel Lebete. Then Shemuel invited Rav to his house. Ochle Nehama de Sa'areh. And he fed him, Nehama de Sa'areh would be bread that's made out of barley. Now barley bread causes a person to get diarrhea. Vekasad de Harsana. And he also gave him a certain type of small fish. Vashkiyeh Shechra. And he also gave him beer to drink. Velo arvele beta kise, and he did not show him where the bathroom was. The reason why Shemuel did this was because he knew that Rav had intestinal problems, and Shemuel, we know, was a doctor, and therefore he said that if he gives him these items over here, it'll cause them to loosen up his stomach, and then eventually he'll show him where the bathroom was. But his kavanah was medicinal. He was trying to cure him. It says, ki eki dilishtalshel, in order that the food will rot in his stomach, so to speak, and therefore he'll be able to eventually release it all, and he'll be healed. Well, Rav, again, did not understand that, and he thought that now Shemuel was also disrespecting him. But again, what Rav says, layit Rav. So Rav cursed him. And he says, ve'amar, man de mitza'aran, the one that has caused me pain, lo lukmu le bene. He should not have any sons. Vechen hava. And that's what happened. Gemara tells us that Shemuel did not have any sons. He only had two daughters. So you see again, he was standing up for kavod hatorana. Even though at the end it was a mistake, Shemuel really intended to respect Rav. However, we have a rule that when a Tamid Hakam says something, even if it's said by mistake, then it comes out that the words really shouldn't have been said. Once it comes out of the Hakam's mouth, already they have an effect. Just like we learned by Yaakov Avinu, when he said that the one that stole the Teraphim should die, he had no intent to curse his wife. But since, bottom line, Rachel was under the Teraphim, so she has suffered the unintentional curse of Yaakov Avinu, because the Tzaddikim, their words are like knives. And even if it's an unintentional, kishigagashi atzame pi ha-shalit, still it has a effect. Comes the Gemara and says, ketanae, actually we have a machloket amongst the Tanaim. Minayin lemila shevoto makom. How do we know that the mila is in that place? Ne'emar kan orlato v'ne'emar nalan orlato. It says by Brit Mila the word orlato, and it says by the mitzvah orla, by the trees orlato. Mal halan davar sh'oseh peri. Just like over there, by the trees, it's something that is fruitful. Afkan davar sh'oseh peri. So too, by the Brit Mila, it's a place that is able to be fruitful. Devrei Rabbi Yoshiya. Rabbi Natan omer, eno tzarich. You don't need that. Harehu omer ve'arel zachar asher lo yimol et besar orlato. Clearly the Pasuk writes, Ve'arel zachar, an uncircumcised male. Now why would the Torah have to tell us a male? So it says, Makom shenikar ben zachrut lenekebut. Obviously it's the place of the body that you discern between male and female. Hence that's what we learn from the word Ve'arel zachar. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. We're able to write tefillin on the skin of a behema teura, of a pure kosher animals. Hayas, let's say wild animals that are teura, you could also use their or for tefillin. And for that matter, if the animal, let's say from the kosher species, however, it was a nevela, it wasn't slaughtered properly, or it was slaughtered properly, but it was found out to be a terefa, meaning it had some internal sickness or wound, still they are kasher, those skins, for writing tefillin. And we also wrap the tefillin, we wrap the parchment in the hair that come from these kosher animals, v'nitfarot begidin, and we also sew the boxes with the gidin, the sinew from the kosher animals as well. V'alakha l'moshe m'sinai, and this is alakha l'moshe m'sinai, shat tefillin nechrachot b'saharan, that you wrap the tefillin up with the hair of these kosher animals, v'nitfarot begidin, and you also sew them, stitch them with the gidin, with the veins, let's say, we'll call them, of these animals. Aval, and kotvin lagabe or behemah teme'ah, but you're not allowed to write on the skin of a behemah teme'ah, velo agabe or haya teme'ah, ve'en otzirich lomar, agabe or nevela utrefa shlehem. It certainly goes without saying that a nevela of a teme'ah animal, or a terefa of a teme'ah animal, certainly one cannot use their skins for tefillin. Ve'en nechrachin b'sahara, nor can use the hair to wrap the tefillin, ve'en nitfarot begidin, and you cannot also use their veins to stitch the boxes of the tefillin. Ve'zu she'ela sha'al baitusi echad et Rabbi Yoshua Garsi. One time a baitusi. Baitusi is a student of the baitos. Baitos was a student of Antigonos, who was one of the great Tanaim, but this fellow baitos went off the path. He ended up forming his own group, and these people shunned all the Torah Shebaal Peh and all the words of Hazal. There were two fellows, one was Sadok and one was Baitos. Sadok started the group called the Tzedukim, and Baitos started the group called the Baitosim. But basically they had the same opinions, that they were very, they called themselves purists in the sense that they only read the Torah Shebichtav, and they did not lend themselves to rabbinical interpretation. So the Gemara says, so one of these Baitosim guys asked him, Yoshua Garsi, he asked him, how do you know that you can't write tefillin on the skin of a behemah teme'ah? So he says, dechtiv, lema'an tiyeh Torat Hashem b'fika. So Rabbi Yoshua answered him, because it says in the pasuk that the Torah has to be in your mouth, and we learn from that pasuk, medavar amutar b'fika, from something that's permissible to eat. So the Baitusi asked the question, ela me'ata al gabe or nevelot utrefot, al yikatevu. So according to you, even if it's from a kosher species, but if it's a nevela or a terefa, since you can't eat it, and your whole source is from lema'an tiyeh Torat Hashem b'ficha, v'nam mutar b'ficha, and since it's not, you cannot ingest these things because they're not, it's a nevela or terefa, you should also not be allowed. So he answered him back, amar le. So the rabbi said, emshon lecha mashal lema'ad davar dome. I'll give you a mashal to what this is analogous to. V'shnei b'nei adan shetchaybu hariga lemalchut. Two fellows that were punished or held punishable by their lives by the king. Echad argo melech. One guy, the king himself, actually executed. Echad harago ispaklitur. And one was killed, let's say, by the chief butcher of the king. Eze mehen meshubach. Which death is more honorable? Have omer ze shalago melech. Obviously, the fellow that the king himself killed is a more honorable death. At least it's mechubad, it's kavod. At least he was killed by the king himself. So the Gemara, what was he trying to say with this mashal? He was trying to say with this mashal is that when you have, let's say, a animal that's a terefa, right? A terefa, who caused the terefa to happen? That already is from Borei Olam. So he's saying certainly a terefa, which happens from Borei Olam, so that's already more chashuv. So therefore, if a terefa is able to be used, so kosher can, something that is not a terefa. Again, we're only talking about in the kosher species. So he's trying to tell him, when it happens naturally from God, obviously that is better. So therefore, he was giving that mashal. Now, of course, the Rishonim point out that this is not the source of the law. Obviously, the source of the law is because when the Torah says lema'an tiyeh Torat Hashem b'ficha, it means from the species. It doesn't mean that it actually has to be something that you can eat. What's the proof? Because, or even from a kosher animal that was slaughtered correctly, you can't eat or. And therefore, clearly, it's got nothing to do with whether you're able to eat it or not. The point is on the kosher species. He was just answering him with this mashal. And what was he telling him? Saying, once I showed you that, for example, let's say a terefa, which is by God, so obviously that has more hashivu, so certainly you'd be able to use it So clearly when it says then, Leman tiyeh torat Hashem b'ficha, it must be referring to not only where you slaughtered it correctly, but even those cases as well. In any event, the Beit Tosi asked him another question. And he told them, if that's the case, if you tell me that a terefah has hashivut, because it was done by God, so therefore, why don't you should be able to eat it? So he says, Amaleh, Torah amra lo tochelu kol nevela, ve'at amad yochelu. He says, what are you talking about? There we have a clear pasuk. He says, until now we're working with logic. But now we have a clear pasuk that says, lo tochelu kol nevela, for that matter, a nevela. Well, let's say, it wasn't slaughtered properly. The Torah clearly says, lo tochelu kol nevela. And you're telling me that we should eat it? So he answered him, Amaleh kalus. He told them, I have praise for you, which means you won the argument. Accolades, you got me on the argument. Comes the Mishnah and says, En osim hilmi b'shabbat. One is not allowed to make hilmi on Shabbat. Hilmi is a mixture of salt and water. It is called hilmi. So one cannot make a mixture of salt water on Shabbat. Aval, Osehu et me hamelach. However, he can make a mixture of me melach, which is salt water, vetovel bahen pito, and he can dip his bread in this mixture of salt water, venoten letochav tavshil, or you could place it in the food itself. Now the Gemara is obviously going to ask a question. Make up your mind. You told me that you can't make hilmi, which is a combination of salt and water, and then you tell me, but you can make me melach. So obviously the Gemara is going to ask this contradiction. Amar Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef comes along and says, "V'halo hu hilmi ben meruba uben muat," which means Rav Yosef comes along and says, "Listen, this hilmi over here, it's whether it's a lot of salt water or whether it is a little." What was he saying? Let's read the Taprashi. He was understanding that the difference between hilmi and me melach was the quantity. Meaning, when the Hakamim said you can't make hilmi, that's talking about it's a big quantity of salt water. While they said you could make me melach, that was a small quantity. So the rabbis were making a difference, Tanakama, between a large quantity and a small quantity. To that, Rabbi Yosef said, V'alohu hilmi ben merube uben mu'at, which means it shouldn't make a difference, the quantity. Meaning, if one is asur, they both should be asur. If one is mutar, they both should be mutar. Rabbi Yosef did not understand the hiluk that the rabbis were making. Let's read that in Taprashi. The ima mirubim asurim, right? If you're going to tell me hilmi is asur because it's a large quantity, afa mu'atim asurim. So an even small quantity of me'mela should be asur. V'im elu mutarim. And if you're telling me that the quantity of salt, let's say the small quantity is permissible, af elu mutarim, which means it should go across the board. Ubi gemara mefaresh. The gemara is going to explain. I continue reading Rashi. De lechumra amar Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef's opinion is actually stringent. De chulan le'isur. Means Rabbi Yosef really holds all quantities of salt water are going to be asur. Why? Because it looks like the isur of me'abed, which literally is tanning the leathers. This is not tanning leathers over here, but what? You're making a mixture where you're going to pickle vegetables. What do they do with salt water? They pickle vegetables in the salt water. And therefore, he says, in order to preserve the vegetables, they replace it in salt water. So just like tanning is you take salt and you also preserve the leather and you fix it, so too making the salt water, even before you actually put the vegetables inside of it, that already is domeh to the tanning process where you're doing it now to preserve vegetables, so that would be asur. So that's the Yosef's opinion. He's osir, whether a lot or whether a little. Whereas the Hachamim came along and made a difference. When you're doing it a lot, that looks like you're doing it in order to pickle vegetables. When you make a little of it, it's like for immediate use. And therefore, it's derech achira. For example, what they said was, tovel bahem pito, right? You can dip your bread into it, so you're using it as a condiment, or you could pour that little salt water into your tafshil. So when it's a little, they didn't make the gezerah. However, Rabbi Yosef made a gezerah, whether it's a little or whether it's a lot. So which case is going to be permissible according to Rabbi Yosef? The Mishnah continues. These are the permissible salt waters. Noten shem in the chetachila letoch ha-mayim or letoch ha-melach. You must add oil into the water first, or into the salt first, and then add the last ingredient. Which means, so long as you dilute it with a little oil, then it's permissible. What does the oil do? That she says it takes away the strength of the salt, and therefore it doesn't allow the salt, let's say, to pickle as well. So according to the Biyoseh, the only way you could do it is, and as she speaks this out clearly, you have to add the oil to the salt, or the oil to the water, but not make the salt water and then add oil. Because once you make the salt water, already you made the isur. So you have to add the oil before the combination of salt and water combine. So that's the opinion of Rabbi Yosef. Comes the Gemara and says, my kamar. Now the Gemara is asking on the Tanakama. You tell me in the beginning you can't make hilme, and then you tell me you can make memela. What are you saying? Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Haki kamar. En osin memelach merubin. Yes, you're not allowed to make a large quantity of memelach, which would be called hilme. Aval osinu memelach muatin. But you're allowed to make a small quantity. So that would be the difference between hilme and memelach. Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef said in our Mishnah, behaluhu hilme bemerubin min muatin. Right? The Rav Yosef came along and said, what do you mean? It should either be all mutar, or it should be all asur. Now the question of the Gemara is, Iba'ilu, Rabbi Yosef le'esor, or la'atir. Which way was Rabbi Yosef going? Was he trying to say both of them should be mutar, or both of them should be asur? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, la'atir. He comes along and says, you know, Rabbi Yosef was actually saying both of them should be mutar. Why? Midelo ketani Rabbi Yosef osir. From the fact that the Mishnah did not just say simply Rabbi Yosef osir. Why? Because the Mishnah could have said it very simply. Tanakama just told you that if you make small quantities, permissible. So the Biyosef should have said, the Biyosef, Osef, what you just said is mutar, I hold it is. And so from the fact that he didn't say that, so therefore when he was very wordy, must be, he was trying to say that both of them are really mutar. Amale Rabbah, Rabbah said that can't be. Ha, midiktani sefa. From the fact that Rabbi Yosef concluded his words by saying, Ve'eluhen me'melach hamutarim. Right? At the end he said, and these are the only kosher me'melach, implying that what? Until you added oil, until that point, everything's going to be asur miklal, to Rabbi Yosef le'esor. E'la amar Rabba le'esor. Now Rabba concludes and says, really, Rabbi Yosef was coming to osir any quantities. V'chen amar Rabbi Yohanan le'esor. V'tanya ne'melach, we have a writer to support this. En osin me'melach merubin latet letoch akevashin shebeto gistera. The gistera we learned earlier is a broken piece of pottery that they used to use not for major things, but in this case they would put their vegetables in it, for example, and pour me'melach into it in order to pickle them. So it says in the Braita, en osin me'melach merubin. You're not allowed to make a large quantity of me'melach latet letoch akevashin to place in the Kevashim is the vegetables. Shibetok gistera, that's in this vessel called the gistera. Aval, oseu me'melach mu'atin, but you're allowed to make a small quantity of it. Ve'ochel ben pito, and dip your bread in it. Ve'noten letok tafshil, or add it into your tafshil. Amar Rabbi Yosef, v'chim epnei shalalu merubin, v'alalu mu'atin, halalu asrim, v'alalu mutarim. What are you going to tell me? Just because one is more in quantity, and one is less in quantity, one is forbidden, and one is permissible? Rabbi Yosef didn't like that. Why? Yomru melacha meruba asura, melacha mu'atit muteret. The people are going to start to say, oh, if you do the melacha in a large quantity, then it's forbidden. But if you do it in a small quantity, it's permissible? Jeez, he was trying to say that if we allow a small quantity, the people are going to come and do it in a large quantity. Which means that we're going to make it, we made a gezerah. Ela elu ve'elu asurin. He came along and said, both are going to be forbidden. So what's the only case where melach will be mutar according to him? Noten shemen umelach, right? You place shemen in the salt, or shemen u'mayim, or the oil into the water, bilvad, shelo yiten mayim u'melach lekhtechila. So long as you don't put the mixture of salt and water lekhtechila. So we clearly see a braita that says Rabbi Yosef was machmir, that he was osir, whether it's merubin, and even if it's mu'atin, because it's a gezerah, that what? That the people are not going to, they're going to say, what's the difference? If you can do mu'atin, why can't you do merubin? And they're going to come to do merubin. Merubin, we don't want you to do because it's domeh to me'abed. Comes the Gemara and says, Gemara gives a siman to remember the next piece. Azin, azin, senon, ve'etrog siman. And we'll see the siman. Tani Rabbi Yehuda bar Habiba. En osin me'melach azin. But it says, you're not allowed to make me'melach azin. Azin means strong me'melach. What does this mean? My me'melach azin. Rabbah Rabbi Yosef bar Abba Dami Tarvayu, kol shabetza safa bahim. So thick, it's mixture of it, that an egg can float in the mixture. Vekama, what's the ratio? Amar Abaye, tre tilte milcha, two-thirds salt, vetilta maya, and one-third water. Lemay avdila, why would somebody make such a potent mixture of salt water? Amar Abavu, lemuraisa. For Muraisa, that is for pickling a certain type of fish. And therefore, the chidush of this Gemara is that even according to Tanakama, that said, a small mixture is okay. However, if it is so supersaturated with salt, like this case over here, even a small mixture is going to be forbidden. She's Tanakama, that was matir, me'melach mu'atin, a small quantity. That's in a regular salt water. But if it's me'melach azin, if it's very saturated with salt to this level, it's going to be forbidden. Why? Because this was used also for pickling the fish. Only in this case, which is regular small quantity, hakamim were lenient. However, if it's a large quantity like this, hakamim would forbid it, even though it's done in a small quantity. Tani Rabbi Yehuda bar Habiba, en molchin snon ubetza b'shabbat. One is not allowed to salt a snon, would be a radish, or an egg on Shabbat. Again, Rashi tells us, we're talking about not one, because if you're just salting one to eat it, that's of course permissible. Rashi says, Gimel Vedalir Hatichot. That's like three or four pieces at a time. Why? Because salt affects these items. Which is when you salt the radish, it does something with it, it hardens it, and it makes it better. And therefore, that would be part of the isud of ma'abed. Just like you take salt and put it on the leather, so too putting it on the vegetables that affect it. So his chiddush was that not only a tznon, not only a radish, but also an egg is affected by salt. Now again, not to put on one egg, because put on one egg, you're eating it. But to put on several eggs, let's say, at the then they're ready. It's not considered derech achila, it would be forbidden. That Chizkiyah mishmedavaye amar, snon asur ubetza muteret. He comes along and says, listen, only the radish is forbidden. Because we see clearly that radishes are affected by salt. However, the egg, when you put salt on it, doesn't change its properties, and therefore, it is no problem to salt many eggs on Shabbat. Amar Rav Nachman Meresh, Rav Nachman said, originally, hava malachna fugla. Originally, I used to salt radishes on Shabbat. Amina, I said, afsudeh kamafsid naleh. I said, if anything, the salt is ruining it. Ve'amar Shmuel, because Shmuel taught, fugla hurfeh ma'aleh. A sharp radish is better. And therefore, by salting it, I was taking away the sharpness. So I thought I was actually ruining it. So therefore, I thought it was permissible. Kevan deshamana leha. But when I heard this, the Chiyata Ula, when Ula came from Eretz Yisrael, Va'amar, he said, "B'ma'araba, malre kishre kishre." It says they would salt mounds and mounds of radishes, not on Shabbat, but in general. Which means when they told me in Eretz Yisrael, this was the way they ate radishes. In order to make them good, they would salt them. So I understood that actually salting radishes makes them better. Memlach lo malachna. So I stopped salting radishes on Shabbat in quantity. However, tibuleh badai matmelina. But I still would eat one radish at a time and dip it in salt. Because eating one at a time is not a problem. But I would stop salting because I heard in Eretz Yisrael that was the way they used to eat them. Meaning, to make them better, they would salt them in mounds. And therefore,
he stopped doing that. Tani Rabbi Yehuda bar Habiba. Rabbi Yehuda bar Habiba taught etrog tznon ubetza. Etrog, we know what that is. A tznon would be a radish. Betza is an egg. El male kelipata nachitzona. If these items did not have an outer shell to them, enam yotzim mibne me'ayim le'olam. These items would be indigestible. They would never leave your system. What is it talking about over here? Well, the etrog. It seems that if a person would just eat a regular etrog without the shell of it, so it would just stay in your system. These items constipate a person. They don't leave your system. But the shell of it somehow causes it to pass through your system. The same thing regarding a radish. And the Gemara says the same thing regarding an egg. Now, what is the shell of an egg? So that she tells us that this is referring to the chilbon. The chilbon, which would be the white part of the egg, which means the, I guess to call the album of the egg, which means if they didn't have that part, so it seems the yellow would not leave a person's system. Ki atah ravdimi amar me'olam no taba gabra bi'amad iznom. Since we're talking about salt, so the Gemara tells us a fact about the Dead Sea. Yamad is dom. Ravdimi said, never did a person ever drown in the Dead Sea. Why? Because it's so salty, you can't drown. People float. Amar of Yosef, hafucha Sedom. Just like Sedom, the city of Sedom was turned over. Vafucha mila. So too, your words, Ravdimi, are turned over. Meaning they don't make any sense. Gavrau de lo tava. You tell me only human beings never drowned in the Dead Sea. Kishura tava, but a beam drowned, which means nothing drowns. Meaning, did a beam ever drown? You take a log, put a piece of wood in the Dead Sea. Did that ever drown? Nothing drowns in the Dead Sea. So what are you talking about when you tell me that a man never drowned in the Dead Sea? Your words are upside down, just like Sedom. Amale abaye lo mebaya kamar. No, I'll tell you what Ravdimi meant. Lo mebaya kishura. I don't have to tell you a beam, a log of wood. That filo bechol nimotchi ba'olam lo taba. A beam, a log of wood never drowns in any body of water. It always floats. Ela afilu gabra has hadushos. Even a human being de taba bechol nimotchi ba'olam that normally does drown, let's say, in other bodies of water. His hadush was biyamad isdom. But in the Dead Sea, he does not drown because of the salt contents. So Gemara says, "Damai nafkamina." What's the nafkamina? Meaning, what do we have to know this for? What halachic ramifications come out of this statement? Gemara says, "Ki ha de Ravin," like the story of Ravin, Havashakil Vazil, was taking himself and walking achore de Rabbi Yirmiyah. He was walking behind Rabbi Yirmiyah, aguda de Yamad Estom, by the bank of the Dead Sea. Amarle, so he asked him, Mao li mimshe mahane maya b'shabbat. He said, is one allowed to take water from the Dead Sea and wash himself, for example, he wants to wash his face with the waters of the Dead Sea on Shabbat. Is it permissible or not? What was his question? Because since the waters of the Dead Sea are medicinal, and we know the rabbis forbade using medicine on Shabbat, lest you might come to crush the spices of the medicine on Shabbat, and therefore it seems that the waters of the Dead Sea were healing for a person's eyes. Now, of course, not placing the waters directly in the eye, obviously mixing them with other waters, etc. But the point is, he was saying, do they allow you to wash, or do they make the gezerah that, you know, since it's used for medicinal, that it's asur? Amale shapir dame. So he told them, no problem. Which means, since people do wash themselves with the waters of the Dead Sea, it's not evident that you're doing it for refuah, and if people won't suspect you for doing it for refuah, they'll say, hey, he's just washing his face. So he asked the next question. What about when I'm placing it in my eye, can I open and shut my eye? Limimatz is to close on miftah, which means that was the way when they used to put this water in their eyes for medicinal reasons, they would open and shut their eyes. So, is that permissible? Ma'olim imatzul miftach, amale, zu lo shamati. Well, I can't answer you that because I didn't hear on that specific case. Kayotze ba shamati, but I heard similar case, shamati. Da'amad abizira, I heard in the name of Rabbi Zera, Zimnin Amale Meshemeh de Rav Matna. Sometimes he made the following statement in the name of Rav Matna, the Zimnin Amale Meshemeh de Mor Ogba. And sometimes he made the statement in the name of Mor Ogba. The Tarvayu, but both rabbis, meaning both Mor Ogba and Rav Matna, Meshemeh de Abu de Shmuel de Levi. They both made their statements, two statements, one in the name of Abu Dishmuel, the father of Shmuel, and another in the name of a rabbi called Levi. Bottom line, what were their statements? Amrin, they said, Had Amar, one said, Yayin betocha ayin asur. Meaning, to place wine in a person's eye, that's going to be asur. Again, it seems that they used to use wine also for medicinal purposes. So to put wine in a person's eye, on Shabbat and start to open and close it, that's going to be asur, because it's evident that it's doing for medicinal purpose. Al-gava'ayin mutar. Al-gava'ayin, which means, let's say, on the outside of the eye, it's okay, because the people will say, he's washing. Now it seems in the olden days they used to wash also with wine. So therefore, he's saying, if you put it on the outside of the eye, so therefore it would be permissible. Now, so therefore, you see clearly again, when you're doing it in the eye and you're opening and shutting it, that's a problem. So we would apply that to the waters of the Dead Sea as well. Now that was one statement of one of the rabbis. The Hadamar, one rabbi said the following, Rok Tafil. Rok Tafil is the saliva of a person who did not eat yet. Which means, when a person, let's say, woke up, he did not eat yet, his saliva is called Rok Tafil. Now, the Gemara tells us, Rok tafil afilu al gava ayin asur. Even to place that saliva on top of the eye is forbidden. Why? Because nobody's going to think that using saliva to wash yourself. And therefore, placing the saliva anywhere next to the eye is going to be interpreted as medicinal. Therefore, it's going to be forbidden. Now, it seems the Gemara understood that there is some healing properties in saliva of a person that did not eat yet. It should be pointed out that they have proven this already medically, that there's a certain chemical, let's say, in the saliva called potassium sulfogenide, which is antibacterial, which actually is proven medically today, that the Hakamim knew this many years before. Comes the Gemara and says, Tistayim. Now, we don't know who made these statements. One statement was made by the father of Shmuel, and one statement was made by Levi. Now the Gemara just wants to know which rabbi made which statement. Tistayim, let us conclude, the Abu de Shmuel, that it was the father of Shmuel, who the Amar Yayin betocha ayin asur, agava ayin mutar. He's the one that said that wine in the eye is forbidden, but above the eye is permissible. How do you know that? Midamar Shmuel, because we know Shmuel, his son, made a similar statement. What did Shmuel say? Shore adam pito biyayin. A person is allowed to take a piece of bread and soak it in wine, v'notno al gava ayin b'shabbat, and place that bread now with the wine on his eye on Shabbat. Now obviously Shmuel is going according to his opinion that we learned the Masechet Berachot, daf nun, oseh adam kol serachav bepat. He held that a person can do even his personal needs with bread. Which means it's not considered mistreating the bread by sticking the bread in the wine. That's why he permits on Shabbat to take the bread, dip it in wine, and actually place it on a person's eye. You have to say also that obviously it doesn't ruin the bread, it's still edible after it. But what do you see Shmuel said? You can only place the wine above the eye, but not in the eye. So the Gemara says, Dishmiyah le miman. Where did Shmuel hear such a difference that the wine only on the outside and not the inside? La v'shem'ele me'abu. Must have he heard it from his father. Meaning, therefore, must be that the statement of placing wine above the eye but not in the eye must have been said by Abu de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel. And that's where Shmuel got his deen of placing the bread with the wine above the eye on Shabbat. He must have heard it from his father. According to what you're saying, Had Amar Shmuel, Rok Tafel. Shmuel also made a statement regarding the saliva of a person that was fasting. Rok Tafel, Afilo Agabe Ayin Asur. He also discussed saliva, Shmuel, that you cannot place it even above the eye because it's clearly done for medicinal purposes. Dishamina Le Miman. Who do you hear that statement from? Ilima Dishamina Le Ma'abu. if you're going to tell me that he heard that from his father as well, Ela Levi Velo Hada, then it comes out that Levi did not make any statements. Which means if you're telling me that Shmuel heard both statements from his father, the wine statement and the saliva statement, then you just told me above that one statement was made by the father of Shmuel and one statement was made by Levi. If you're telling me that both he heard both statements from his father, then what did Levi say? So Amar Ela Hadash mi alim Abu, Hadash mi alim Levi. Bottom line, Shmuel heard one statement from his father and one statement from Levi. We just don't know which statement he heard from his father and which statement he heard from Levi. Comes again and says, Amar Moruk Bama Shmuel. So now we go back to our question. Now we know what the Nafka Mina was. Now we know why the rabbi had to tell me that the Dead Sea, nobody ever drowned. To teach me what? That since nobody ever drowned, meaning it's a very salty water. And therefore you have to know on Shabbat, while it would be permissible to wash your face with the waters, however, it will be forbidden to place it in your eye and open and close your eye, because then it will be evident that you're doing it for medicinal purposes, and that would be asur on Shabbat. So therefore, there was enough coming out of him telling us that it's a very salty water. And we continue. Amar Moruk Bama Shemuel, Shore Adam Kilurin Me'arib Shabbat. Kilurin was a certain paste that they used to use for the eyes. It was a healing for eyes. So it says a person is able to soak the kilurin, meaning make this paste, me'ereb Shabbat, from Friday, v'noten al gabei einav b'Shabbat, and he can place it in his eyes on Shabbat, which is a chidush, v'eino choshesh, and he does not have to be concerned. Now, only question, what do you mean? If this is medicine, what's there to it? So that she comes and tells us that there are no problems over here. Why? Look at Rashi. Rashi dibur amathil. Rashi dibur amathil. Shore. Second wide line. Shore bemayim. You could add water to the kilurin. That's this paste that they used to use for the eyes. Venoten al gabe anav. And you could place it in your eyes even on Shabbat. Why? Dildide. For him, for the guy himself who's placing it in his eye, kevan da'atzrichua l'shnotam me'erev Shabbat ika hekera. Since the rabbis told him that the only way to make this medicine is by doing it on erev Shabbat, which means normally this item was made right before you use it. And the fact that the rabbis told him, no, you cannot apply this medicine in the normal way. You have to prepare it in a non-normal fashion, meaning you have to prepare it from before Shabbat. So once the guy knows already that the rabbis made him do it in an unusual way, he himself is not going to come and grind medicine on Shabbat. Well, there's no reason why we don't let you take medicine, because you might come to grind it. But in this case over here, since already he had such a hekir, the rabbis made such a noticeable difference that they make him make the concoction from before Shabbat. So in this case, he will remember. And regarding other people, people won't suspect that he's doing it for medicinal reasons, as she says, because since it's a watery medicine, they'll just think he's just washing his eye with it. And therefore, there's no gezerah, not for him, and not for other people. So that's why he said, if you want to use this kilurin, so long as you made it before Shabbat, it's permissible to put it on Shabbat as well. Again, since we're talking about a medicine that normally was made right at the time of usage, and you made it earlier, so that would serve as a hekir to remind him not to come and grind anything. Aye, what about other people? Other people will just assume that he's washing himself. Comes the Gemara and continues. Comes the Gemara and continues and says, Bar Liva'e, the son of Levi, Have Ka'e Kame de Mor Ogba. He was in front of Mor Ogba. Hazya Dehava Mayitz upatah. He saw on Shabbat he was using kilurin, this eye healing, and he was opening and closing his eyes, which means he was actually putting in his eye and opening and closing it. Amar le kule ay vaday lo shara Mor Shmuel. He said, "Oh, relax. Mor Shmuel did not go so far." Meaning, although he allowed to, let's say, use it on Shabbat, since you prepared it from before Shabbat, but to put it in your eye and open and close it, then already it's evident that you're doing it for refuah. Then already, you're taking it too far. Shmuel taught that why you can make the killing before Shabbat and use it. but in an inconspicuous way. But to put it in your eye and actually open and close it, he says, for sure, this far, Moshe Shmuel did not be lenient. And we go one more point. Shalach le Rabbi Yanai lemor Ogba. Rabbi Yanai sent to Mor Ogba. Now, Mor Ogba, who was the Abedin, as she tells us, he was very close to Shmuel. So it says that Rabbi Yanai sent a message to Mor Ogba. Lishdar lan Mor mehana kilurin de Mor Shmuel. Send me some of the kilurin, that eye ointment of Mor Shmuel. So again, Shmuel was a doctor also. So he said, you know, send me some of that good stuff, that eye ointment of Mor Shmuel. Shalach le. So he sent back. Shadure meshadan nalach. He said, you know what? I'm going to send it to you. Delo temat sarayin anas. So you don't think that I'm cheap. I'm going to send it to you. But you know what? Elahachi amar Shmuel. But let me tell you something else. Tova tipat sonen shaharit. More beneficial is placing some cold water in your eyes in the morning when you wake up, v'rechitzat yadayim v'raglayim behamin arbit, and bathing your hands and your legs in hot water in the evening, mikol kirulin shebe'olam, better than all the eye ointments in the world. I mean, you want to do something good for your eyes? Just put some cold water in your eyes every morning, bathe your legs and your arms in hot water in the evening, and that'll give you good eyes, better than any ointment. Tanya Rabbi Achebe Bebraita to support this. Amar Rabbi Muna Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Toba Tipat Sonen Shahrit Ulchitzat Yadayim V'Raglayim Arbit Mikol Kirulin Shebe'olam. He told, listen, I'll send it to you, but let me give you a better advice. You can even do something even more simple than that, just with cold water. And I heard the Baalei Musar explain exactly this dialogue between Rabbi Yanai and actually, who was sending him over here? This was Rabbi Yanai to Mor Ogba. Mor Ogba was giving Rabbi Yanai a great musar. In general, in life, when people are growing in religion, generally, they like to do things that are very deep and esoteric, and involve themselves in all mysticism, and, you know, things that are very, very, considered on high levels. But in truth, the greatest service of God is to serve God on the simple things. Which means, when a person has mastered the simple things, for example, person's interested in having all types of kavanot, etc., just make berachot the proper way. Make the beracha, pronounce each letter the right way. Make sure when you say Yudke Vavke, you have in mind that you're saying Hashem's name, Sayyid Bikdusha, meaning Adonakol, etc. Meaning, don't forget the basics. People in religion, unfortunately, are searching for such, you know, complexities of it, and the basics they forget. The Pashtut is much greater than the complexities. The basics, the Kiryat Shema on time, the Kavanah when you put on your Tefillin, the making the Berachot with Kavanah, is the elementary things, and not elementary. We would think the elementary, like the Mitzvah Shirim writes in the introduction to his book, and sometimes the elementary things, because they're so simple, we say, this is not important, I want the heavy stuff. The contrary, the heavy stuff is only relish. It's only an addition. It's a condiment. But the main thing is to master the simplicity. If you looked at the Gedolim, their greatness was they didn't show any signs of loftiness or any signs of depth. When you acted in a very pashtut way, it means they fulfilled everything in its basic level. They added, of course, kavanah, but not to take away from the principles. So that's what he was saying over here. Rabbi Yanai sends to Mor Ogba, send me some of the kilurin. Kilurin is the, you know, complex eye ointment. He said, listen, I'll send it to you, but listen, you don't have to go with the complexities. You could use even a simple item like bathing your eyes with water, cold water every morning, and that'll do even more for you than the kilurin. Which is, in religion, sometimes the basics. Not sometimes. The basics, of course, more important than all the other things. People, unfortunately, today think that they're walking around with a red string around them or a kamiya attached to them, and this is, you know, kodesh kodeshim. This is the most important thing. Meanwhile, they missed zman kiryat shema. They didn't pray the first beracha, the amidah with kavanah. That's what the rabbi was telling him on his level, of course. Listen, I'll give you the extra stuff. I'll give you the kilurin. You want to know the lofty hadushim? But don't forget the basics. Even something so simple, putting water in your eyes,
That already is the best. And the truth is, in health, it's like that also. Just basic hygiene, that's usually the best solution to most of the remedies of the person. The person starts doing some of these crazy, far-out ideas. Here you see, washing your face every morning with some water, that can do more for your eyes than most remedies.